Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Dum de dum de dum de dum dum de dum de dum 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 de dum de dum de dum dum de dudley dum dum de dudley dum de dudley dum de dudley dum dum de dum de dum de dum dum de dudley dum.
This is Dumby Dub, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the tiger that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the mangly old pussycat that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our surprise return, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumby Dub comes from Philip Townley. Thank you, Philip. Now, Luce, if someone would like to do a Philip and send us in a Dumby Dub, how can they do that?
If you'd like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction or break into someone's house and delight Twitter. Ring us on 02030313105 or leave us a message on Speakpipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs to Shedcode for sponsoring us, and to Derek, alone in the back bedroom. Derek is trying to build bridges with the women of Ambridge and the cricket team. He decided to try and give Usha some private tuition to see if that would help. He was trying to show her his googly, but she whacked him with the bat smack in the pavilion.
She's so rubbish, I'm surprised she even hit the pavilion. Anyway, folks, this has been a momentous week in Ambridge, and that's reflected in the amount of calls. On this week's episode, we have calls from Claire from Clapham, who says it's all about the bottom line. Cycling Christine, who says there's no second chances. Witherspoon, who thinks Lillian needs closure. Cat Brown, oh, love me cat. Cat, hello cat. Mm. Who has money worries. New York Nigel, who thinks we're all having a mass hallucination. And Andrew Horn, who thinks Puscats a proper Puscat. But first, before our merry band of quartering roses, most exciting bit of the show, I'm going to lie back, think of England, smoke a cigar, just listen to Juicy Lucy Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
We began the week with a browse around Josh's new executive workspace. It's the bus shelter on the edge of the green. It's good for networking, very cost effective, open plan with great transport links. Talking of new premises, Alice's company is also moving to Barrow Farm. That'll be nice. Shove all the rotting old cows up into a big pile, throw a blanket over them, and no one will ever know you're working in a cow death camp. Alice has got her own buyer with water trough. It's quite a step up for her. There's even a vending machine. Well, it's a silage clamp, but the principle's the same. Pip was martyring herself by not sleeping and working like a maniac. Toby suggested sleeping tablets. Lots of them. Let's just have a look at that will first, though, Pip. He's pleased with his gin. This is the best thing I've done, he said proudly. This is the only thing you've done, Toby. In a frankly jaw-droppingly astonishing piece of nonsense, Jolene, who has been silent for the last couple of months, was apparently keen on investing in Toby's gin. Gin they don't like much, with money they don't have, because a year ago they were up to their crotches in culvert water and they nearly went sodding bankrupt. But now they have money to invest. Of course they have. Pip is still somewhat on the defensive side, pointing out that anyone could have brought the cow clap onto the farm. "It's carried on mucus and blood, so it could have been any of our visitors," she said. "Blimey, Auntie Piggy slogging up the drive, dripping with mucus. This is Ambridge, not The Walking Dead. Anyway, Pip has handled this in her usual mature fashion and decided that rather than admit responsibility for the one small problem she's created, she is going to create a massive problem by refusing to touch any animals ever again, become vegan and move to the island of Sark. Ben has left Brookfield and has been replaced with two sound effects, banging dance music and the bing of a shop doorbell. No wonder he's being bullied at school. He must stand out, what with being a doorbell. Ed Grundy, who I'm going off rapidly, used his entire stock of courage on not demanding that Pip confesses about the IBR and focused instead on telling his wife off for working three jobs to pay for her children's birthday present. If this triggers some kind of return to depression, then I wash my hands of him. Emma says she's working at a chicken factory near Waterloo Cross. Chicken factory, my arse. It's a clip joint called Chicken Skin and she's a podium dancer. Over at Home Farm, the air was filled with the monotonous hum of a drone. Then Adam shut up and we got to watch Brian's new technology with Alice. Harassment went trundling around the village, annoying women. Basically, he just pissed off everyone with ovaries. For someone who is supposed to be slightly sensitive, he could not have played it worse with Usha if he tried by bringing her a limp Christmas cactus. If he'd bought her a Hoover attachment, she couldn't have been less impressed. Linda decided to cheer Kirsty up by making her eat cold pasta in the garden and telling her about Robert's pickle ratio. That was very nearly as exciting a time as Justin giving Lillian when he took her to a cottage with no roof that was about to be demolished, dragged her through the brambles and hoisted her in through the window and chanted on about Rhodesia, which is called Zimbabwe. Don't worry, it's only been called that for nearly 40 years, Justin. But then the best thing of all the best things happened. They trotted back in through the door and Justin said he hoped that now he'd showed her his dead mother's house that was about to fall down, Lillian would love him more. And she said, "Oh, for Christ's sake, put a sock in it, you old fart." And then we got, "Hello, puss cat." Twitter lit up like a Christmas tree. I clapped my little hands in glee and Justin kicked a hole in the oak laminate TV cabinet. The game is on. The end.
That's quite good this week. Oh, well done, you. So,
sorry, Luce. my voice is disappearing. So I have to stop for a bit and have a drink every now and again. Yes.
All right. You got beer on tap there, have you?
Oh, yeah.
To hand. No. All right. Smashing. No. Now, I'm going to break convention here with how we do things normally on Dumdy Dum. Your tweet of the week, it's not Hinge Zandal, is it?
No.
All right. So can I just say, right, my tweet of the week was his return of the mat.
Right. That was great. I know, I loved that.
So much so that I've decided to do all of my answers. Huh?
Oh, I thought you'd made a mix of it.
No. Right, oh. I'm whacking it on the end of the show, though. However, I've decided...
Oh, we've got a call to go at the end of the show as well, Robert Wilson's.
Yes.
Because it really made me laugh.
Can I talk now?
Yeah, sorry.
Right, great. Now, I've decided to do all... of my answers in 90s R&B hits.
Good.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be tricky at all.
No, it really works.
Okay.
Because the thing is what Justin feels for Lillian, Real Love, as sung by Mary J. Blige, I don't know. I can keep going with all of this. So because of that wonderful tweet, that's what you're going to get from me. So over to you, Lucy Freeman, and I'll just
answer. Thank you, Inge Zandel. Now look what you've bloody done. Jeez, it's not maps. We've got flipping 90s hit. Anyway.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Claire from Clapham.
Yes.
Hi Dumpty Dum, it's Claire from Clapham here, trying to record a short message because I rambled too much last time. I am wanting to talk about money today, but very quickly first I'll just have a quick comment on the whole Matt returning thing. I think that the comments we've had this week from Justin about his parents' relationship are going to be incredibly prescient, and the way he talked about his mother still loving his father despite all his flaws and him being a bit of a bounder and a cad. I fear for Justin that Lillian will feel much the same way about Matt, and he might be the loser there. So we'll have to see how that goes. In terms of money, firstly, Ed and Emma. Emma, I think, you know, she wanted more for her kids and she's gone out and done it. So good on her. I understand why Ed feels frustrated, but, you know, that's the reality. You can't all bring in the money. You need everyone to chip in. You know, the main thing for someone like Emma would probably be trying to get the childcare cover for that. But they're living in this big multi-generational household and she's got that freedom. So good on her. However, Emma, please stop using the credit card. It's the road to ruin. Stop doing that. Otherwise, things will really go tits up. Secondly, a slightly different end of the scale, Shula and Alistair's finances. And I'm interested that Shula and Alistair have had a bit of a rapprochement recently. They're suddenly all lovey-dovey again. Their relationship is rekindled. And I'm concerned that money will be the crack on which this whole relationship starts to peel apart again. The way that they bickered with each other about, oh, you spent loads of money, now I can spend loads of money, that's not always a good sign. And I'm surprised that she didn't bring up the fact that they're probably still paying off the mortgage from when they had to borrow all this money when he had the gambling debts. And I imagine that at some point that will come up. And also at some point he might be backed into a hole and be tempted to blow a load of money and try and win some back. I do hope not, but it wouldn't surprise me. And I'm feeling that we could be seeing homeless horses in the village in the next couple of years if this does play out like that. And it will be particularly poignant because they had just sort of rekindled their relationship, and it would be a shame to see it fall apart around those things. But I think that there is great pressure coming on the money, and we'll see what happens there. Anyway, keep up the good work and I will speak to you soon.
She fears for Justin that Lillian will feel the same way about Matt as Justin's mother did about his father. That passed me by completely. But what a very good thought.
I know, yes. I know.
I was thinking, what the flaming hell are we learning all about Justin's dead mother for? Who cares? And then there it was. But they always do that when they want to give someone a bit of depth, don't they? Like we learned all about Matt's horrible mother and his in Walthamstow, bizarrely, in the home in Walthamstow, and his brother and all adopted brother and all that. And I mean, we know why he was there, but you know, it's kind of when they're trying to give someone a bit of backstory, they rope in the parents. Unlike Pat, Pat may as well have been the Immaculate Conception for all we know. The woman has got no family anywhere.
No, they're in Wales. We know that.
Yeah, I know, but they never talk. She never writes. They never ring. What, you know, nothing.
Mm. Justin's childhood was a bit twisted, as Keith Sweat sang in that early 90s classic.
Yes, Royfield. Is this really going to go on for every call?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. Now, Shula and Alistair and the money. Yes, I do like the idea of homeless horses cantering around Ambridge and selling the big issue. I like that. They've just got such a peculiar attitude to money that sits very oddly, considering that they both know that their big issue is money because of, you know, Alistair's gambling problem and everything. It just seems they seem to be spending money like water and almost not taking it seriously, sort of saying, oh, well, magically it will all turn out all right. Don't worry about it. And it just seems slightly odd. But anyway, no doubt that's a storyline that we can expect to unravel rapidly over the next 6 months.
I'm more bothered about the Emma and Ed storyline.
Yeah. What, the her having three jobs and him seeing, apparently reading that as you've got a small penis, Ed.
I'm just worried that she won't walk away, as Jade sang. That's my worry in all of this. And also, I do agree with you.
You want her to leave Ed?
I don't want her to walk away.
Oh,
but,
I see.
But he's been a bit of a twonk, though, isn't he?
He is. A bit of a twonk isn't a 90s sink.
No. Soon to be released dubstep classic.
I really like Ed. And then he does this self-pitying, oh, I can't, you know, Emma's just like the driving force behind that relationship. She really is. And she has to be, because they'd just sort of trickle to a halt if it was down to him. Because A, he's got this kind of this sort of internal saboteur thing where he gets into things don't go right. And then he takes a massive chance on something which goes tits up. And then he's like, oh, I knew it wouldn't work. And it's this self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, he's always going to be running out of money. They're never going to be, you know, it's not for the likes of us and all that rubbish. It's just the energy. And she just sees the situation and thinks, no, I don't want that.
Mm.
He doesn't seem to care. Fine. What can I do to change it? I can do this. I'm going to do that then. And, you know, I really admire her, really.
Mm. Me too. And I must admit, I'm somewhat tired of old Ed Grundy.
Yeah.
And what I thought was really kind of noticeable was this whole thing where she doesn't want to be a Grundy wife, does she?
Yeah.
So
no.
she said it, and then Eddie said, oh, you know, she's a typical Grundy woman, you know, and blah.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing that she wants.
Yeah.
She does not want to be Clary. And she's
mopping up everyone else's mistakes and helping
absolutely.
Them just get through.
Absolutely.
It was interesting that she said, my children.
Mm.
I don't want my children, Ed.
Yeah.
And he said, our children. And I thought, that's interesting. She's already kind of separated away.
Do you remember Whitney Houston did that cover of I Am Every Woman in the 90s?
No.
Well, she did. But Chaka Khan's version is definitely the definitive one, isn't it? It's just the best. And that's what Emma is.
What, Chaka Khan?
No, every woman. She's just strong and independent and just like, she could kick Ed to the curb and just like run things.
Yeah.
She could. Mm.
Yeah. We now have Cycling Christine.
You know what? She's been
what?
All around the world, aye, on that bike, hasn't she?
aye, she has. What's your name for some reason?
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle.
Hello, Royfield. Hello, Lucy. Hello, all fellow Dumpty Dummers around the world. This is Christine the Cyclist calling, saying goodbye as we're just about to leave the States on our 2-week voyage back to the UK. I'm really annoyed about the cliffhanger at the last minute on Friday, because we will be out of Wi-Fi range for the next week and so won't be able to find out what's going to happen and the follow-up to Matt coming back until we get to Europe. For me, it would be quite simple. If anyone had done to me what Matt did to Lillian, I would just tell him where to go. You wouldn't get a second chance if you cleaned me out and deserted me like that. But I've no doubt this won't happen, because it will make much better storyline for Lillian to have to struggle over which one she wants. But get rid of that man, I would say. I also would say that I have been so annoyed with Pip and what has been going on. There is no way that she should have not have confessed as soon as things started going wrong. In fact, if she'd confessed straight away, as soon as they found out about the herd having IBR at Brookfield, perhaps they'd have had a chance to inoculate the cows at the other farms and prevent them getting the disease. Also, the fact that she's not going to do the mob grazing this year, surely if she'd done that, she could have at least used the money to help out Brookfield or help out Tony and Adam with inoculating their cows. Just, if she was my daughter, I just don't know how I would react when I eventually found out the truth that had been kept from me. Anyway, goodbye to you all, and it'll be good to be back in Blighty, and maybe we'll be able to go along to a dum-de-dum meet-up sometime.
Yes, Pip, for God's sake! They've played some really, really silly games with this storyline, and I know Witherspoon covers this as well.
Mm.
That nonsense where she was trying to talk to her mum and Ruth just kept going on and on about, oh, and this happened, and oh, I must, what do you mean? Oh, no, Clary, I forgot that she was there. I must go and sort it out and all that stuff. And she's trying to tell her mum that she's done this thing with the IBR.
Mm.
And if that was a real conversation, you'd go, just shut up! Because it's, you know, you have that kind of familiarity of rudeness with your family, don't you? You can say, just shush, I need to tell you this, shut up.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have just sat there going, no, but mum, no, but could have just, it just wouldn't happen. And it's such an irritating conceit. And then there was the next conversation she had where, again, she's not getting to the point. And she is being, I mean, as Christine pointed out, if she'd admitted it straight away, they could have inoculated their cows and then there wouldn't be this mess. What interests me is, why do they call a single cow a beast? They say, oh, they've had to put a beast down or they've lost a beast. And all the rest of the time they call them cows. Hmm. I don't get.
That's a really, you know what? I should know the answer to this. And it's in this week's History of English podcast around the use of the word beast and exotic animals. And I only heard this 2 days ago and I've forgotten. So, dear listener, if you want to find out the definitive answer to this, Kevin Stroud's The History of English podcast.
Don't listen to us. Listen to someone who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, and the answer is there. And I think the word... Oh, there's the word for another animal. Deer used to be beast. And we've now shifted the word deer to mean a deer as opposed to generically a beast. And another interesting... thing which I noticed on that podcast, which I'll just say to you, Lucy, and all good listeners, the letter A was taken from the Phoenician alphabet and actually was an oxen. And if you turn a capital letter A upside down, you can see the horns and the ox head. There you go.
Wow.
It's got the two horns pointing up and it's got a little face. Yeah.
Why was it an oxen?
I don't know. But
it hasn't got a little face. It's got a triangle.
Yeah, but that's the head, though, isn't it? Then there's the horns.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Anyway, the History of English podcast, everybody. Mm. It's very good.
With a spoon.
Mm.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Two items on the agenda today. First, I thought I heard a collective groan from the international audience when Ruth was wittering on while Pip was attempting to confess to her. Scriptwriters, you've gone to that well once too often. If someone has something to say, let her or him say it. Enough with the false suspense. Besides, I am very curious to see how David and Ruth react to finding out, as I tweeted, that Pip threw them under the bus and then ran them over. Second item, of course, the return of Matt. My prediction, sure to go wrong, is that this day will be relatively brief. We've now seen the softer side of Justin, so if you were Lillian, who would you rather choose, a rich but ruthless businessman who also is a bit of a teddy bear, or a jailbird con man who ran off to Central America with your money and probably spent it all? I think Matt has reappeared so that Lillian can resolve any emotional loose ends about him, close that chapter of her life, and then walk down the aisle with Justin. That's my bet and also my recommendation to her. But who knows what will actually happen, as Lillian does have a history of poor decision-making. I'll close with a reflection on the annual festivities of this past week of Tartan in New York. As always, it was filled with lots of warm and wonderful people, much like us Dumpty Dummers. As some of you know, husband and I also got to meet with and present a homemade cake that we didn't bake to the First Minister. Kirsty would have approved. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to sing the praises of this podcast to Ms. Sturgeon. Perhaps next year. Talk to you all soon.
So, Matt is there to close things down for Lillian, to give Lillian the opportunity to actually choose rather than... Because Justin made a choice, didn't he? Mm. He said, Miranda, I don't want you. I want old Ginny breath over here. But Lillian didn't choose. He was the only one there because Matt had sodded off and she wasn't going to keep faithful to him because she didn't know what he was doing and he'd taken her money. Mm. But do we, because the reaction, the happiness that Matt's return, that hello puss cat, everybody went bloody nuts. And if we feel like that, what does Lillian feel like?
Well,
is it that he is just irresistible? He's just one of those people that no matter what they do, you always forgive them because they're more exciting and interesting than anyone else.
Yeah, well, Faith Evans sang about a love like this, didn't she?
Did she?
Yeah. Then again...
Or did she do the impression of Margaret Thatcher? Oh, no, that was Faith Brown. Sorry.
Yeah, Luce, that's a completely different Faith.
She was on Blankety Blank. Faith Brown, I mean, not Faith Evans.
Yeah. What's she doing now, I wonder?
Faith Brown?
Hmm.
She's still doing shows because Harriet went to see her the other day.
Really?
Mm.
Good heavens.
But apparently she gets a bit muddled up now about which impression she's doing and she sort of slides out of one and into the other.
Well, Bone Thugs and Harmony sang about the crossroads, and that's where Lillian's at right now, isn't she?
Oh, not those crossroads.
No.
Okay. Yeah, no, she's not.
She is.
Because Matt's not offering anything.
Is he not?
Well, no, he hasn't so far. Surely,
the very fact that he's back in their house, he's saying he wants to pick things up. And also, he would like to have a little bit of bump and grind, as R. Kelly once sang.
She changed the locks.
I know, that was nonsense. But then again, he is a little bit of a rogue. So you could imagine him jimmying a window and kind of like the climbing through.
No, then she'd have called harassment.
Didn't he take a whole load of her stuff and she reported it to harassment? So harassment could actually arrest him.
Yeah.
Tell you what, Matt's another one that's been all around the world, hasn't he?
He has.
Mm. But I thought what Witherspoon said was very perceptive, that basically Matt is an emotional accelerant for whatever happens between Lillian and old Justin.
But now we will get to see whether or not Lillian really is just all about the drama or whether she genuinely does want a proper committed relationship.
We will.
Cat Brown now.
What's new, Pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hello, Dumdy Dum. It's Cat Brown here, coming out of hibernation after a fantastic week of Archer's episodes. What a lot of treats. I, like everybody else listening, I imagine, screamed and clutched my pearls on hearing, hello, Pusscat, come out on Friday. What an absolute treat. I'm actually calling with a quick question on behalf of a friend who basically just wanted to know where on earth Jolene and Kenton got the money to back Toby's gin, because aren't they basically in hock to David until the cows come home? And from the way that they discussed it, it was very much sort of like, well, you know, we've got a few thousand just hanging around waiting to invest in like potentially awful artisan gin. Anyway, if somebody can clear that up for me, that would be a delight, and look forward to next week's discussion about what happens to Lillian and Pusscat. Very much, bye.
Exactly. What a load of pants. Investing in the gin and then Toby having a fit because he couldn't call it Archer gin. And, you know, if you're going to have a character making a massive decision like Jolene, at least let us hear the woman. You know, the most that Jolene's been is a dirty look from further down the bar when Kenton's a bit tardy with the pints, you know, and then all of a sudden she's making massive decisions like Jolene's decided we should invest in your gin. No, you can't talk to her. It's all right. It's fine. Just believe me. Honestly, it's fine. It's just absolute nonsense. And they still haven't got any money. They still haven't paid money back for David. Wouldn't David go completely berserk if he knew that not only had he not paid him back, but he was using the money that he had got to go and invest in some crackpot scheme from a completely unreliable lunatic? I mean, it's just ridiculous. I don't know where that is. Presumably it's going to be because Kenton is going to say to Pip, oh, well, we offered to back the gin, and he didn't want us to. And then she'll go, Toby! And that will be that. The air will be full of bits of shattered relationship.
But we are led to believe that this batch of this gin is actually quite good, though, aren't we? Everyone said, oh, actually, it's quite nice.
No, the most they said was distinctive.
That's not true. I think that's what Josh said. But then again, how old's he? 18. He doesn't know anything about alcohol.
Anyway. But, you know, he's absolutely desperate for backing. It's just ridiculous. I mean, that bit of the thing is maybe Toby refusing the backing is not half as ludicrous as them offering to back him in the first place with no money. They don't have any money, and the money they do have, they owe to David. It's just silly. It's absolutely daft. Really daft.
Well, maybe that's what's being set up for the future, isn't it? Because, you know, a little bit more sibling rivalry, but between the Archer boys as opposed to the Frere brethren.
Yeah.
Because we have had this, we have had a little echo of this before when he got that new new SUV. And Dave's all, wait on a minute, don't you still owe me some cash here?
Andrew Horn.
Can I just say, though, just before going to Andrew Horn, everybody does a very good Matt Crawford, don't they? And Kat Brown's was tip top. Yeah. Well done, Kat.
You just do Ray Winston, don't you? Yeah. It's kind of, all right, darling. Yes, Andrew Horn.
Hello, Pusscat. No, not really, Earthlings. It's Andrew Horn here. Trust you're all well. Well, that was a nice Friday evening. Little surprise. So I saw the poll and I voted Team Justin. I do think Catherine Kavanagh's view that actually neither of them are worth it, she should just get on with things by herself, is a very, very valid opinion. But I think that Lillian is of an older generation where she actually does want to spend her life with someone. She doesn't want to be on her own, although she is strong enough and can and could do it. So then she's now got the choice. Is she going to be going with Justin, who is fun but dependable, or Matt, who's edgy, the lovable rogue, although actually maybe less lovable since he took her to the cleaners last time and went away? And I think it'll come down to whether she's, how much is she looking for excitement in her life versus companionship. If she tips down the excitement route, then Matt will be back in. If not, hopefully it'll be Justin. Anyway, I wish you all a happy Easter and speak to you again soon. Bye.
He thinks Lillian is ready to settle down. I'm not so sure.
Yeah,
I think she'll do something really daft, like tell him to sling his hook. And then he'll say, run away with me, Pusscat. And she'll go, or something daft. And poor Justin will be left on his arse.
Andrew Horn's...
I swapped out to saying poor Justin when 3 weeks ago I couldn't stand Justin. But now he's given us all a big sob story about his parents. I'm all Team Justin. It's ridiculous.
The only thing I can say to any of this is that... for a posh boy, his Matt Crawford wasn't bad either.
Ah.
Yeah. Because, you know, Andrew's very posh. But no, he's good. That very, very plausible Matt Crawford, I thought.
Now, here's a man who cannot do a Matt Crawford. New York Nigel. He's more Joan Crawford than Matt Crawford.
Hello, everyone. It's Nigel calling. Well, how annoying. We were treated to a long and protracted realistic Robin Helen story that went over several years. And now, whoop-de-doo, here we go with Matt's miraculous and totally unlikely reappearance just within a few days of Justin and Lillian's rapprochement. I thought for a minute that it was one of those shared hallucination things, which was probably induced by perhaps too much champagne. It all seemed very unlikely. And would the Matt that we thought we knew have been hanging around inert in the sitting room or wherever he was, while Justin and Lillian were cavorting around in the hall discussing who would have the first bath? And didn't she change the locks when Justin moved in and... well, let alone when Matt did a runner with all her stuff. And if he wanted to come back, would those really have been his first words? However much we might have wanted to hear them, wouldn't he have been more likely to say, oh, I'm so sorry or something, or called beforehand? It just seems a little gratuitously melodramatic. And anyway, we've got the cow clap story, we've got the Pip and Toby story, we've got the Kirsty Tom story, the Ed and Emma story, and who knows what else. If we needed an old character back at this point, I'd like it to have been Mike and Vicky and Bethany turning up again. Anyway, I'm enjoying the other stories at the moment, and I'd be very happy to see just those brewing away against all the backdrop of donkey dramas and maypole shenanigans and even someone having a new kitchen fitted at this point. I never thought I'd say that. Anyway, thanks for everything and hope to call again soon. Bye.
And mass hallucination. Why couldn't we have had someone else back? I don't know, Nigel. I'm quite happy about Matt coming back. But I do wish that we could have had Rachel and Vicky, Vicky and Bethany and Mike back. But I'd like them all back. All the ones I like. There are some of them that can stay away. I don't really care about, like
such
Kaz.
As
Kaz.
Oh dear. Well, she was hardly
irritating moral lesson. Let you be patronised by the archers.
I think that's a little bit harsh, but I do see where you're coming from.
Can we do Vicky Cole and Kenya's email now?
All right.
She says, I wanted to say how horrible I think Josh is. And he's getting worse. Not pleasant to listen to. I wonder if he's due a comeuppance at some stage.
Well, absolutely.
But his comeuppance has been happening sort of on and off every week, hasn't it? Someone catches him out and says, stop being a little turd. And then he just carries on. Surely at some stage, David and Ruth will notice how awful their offspring are. At the moment, they seem blind to all their faults. And I do have sympathy for Jill. I, too, recently had an aqua aerobics costume-related emergency.
Ooh.
Although mine was less of the going transparent and more of the popping out.
Ooh.
You still let Royfield to be passed out. The nice Kenyan instructor who was having a trial session at the pool has not been seen since. I'm writing this on a very gloomy wet morning at Wilson Airport in Nairobi as we set off on a little family safari to Samburu.
702 did a song, which is Where My Girl's At. And that's what I thought about the popping out. Just saying. Big R&B hit of the 90s, folks.
Where my girl's out, I think that's what. Oh, dear. A friend of mine has fairly elderly parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still quite kind of flirtatious with each other and tactile, which is very sweet. And they're not sweet. That's deeply patronising, Lucy. It's good. They're a good, happy couple. And they were in the swimming pool. And the mother playfully swam up behind her husband and twanged the waistband of his trunks and tried to pull them down, and it was the wrong man. Didn't have her glasses on.
I was watching NBC this morning, and every day it's sponsored by some relish company, but they do people who are 100 today. In America, and they have them on a faux label of this relish, and it's, you know, Pat Boone from Omaha, Nebraska is 100 today and whatever, and you kind of go through these people. There's this couple, they've been married for 75 years on there, and I just went, oh, and they look so lovely. Got married when they were 16, still together, still going strong. 91, the pair of them, 75 years worth of marriage loose. Really touched me, it did.
There's an Ole and Lena joke that Sir Garrison Keillor tells about a couple who go and see the pastor when they're Ole's 94 and Lena's 92, and they say, "Pastor, we need your help. We want a divorce." And he says, "You're 92 and 94. What are you talking about? You've been married for 53 years. What do you mean you need a divorce?" And then she said, "Ah, well." We had to wait until the children had died. The shock would have killed them. right, should we do tweets of the week now? Oh, no, we need to go off and do Facebook and things, don't we, with Yocklebear.
Oh, OK, smashing. Right, then, that's a cue for me to say this is the end of part one, folks. But the best is still yet to come. It's called part two. And at the start of part two, we have a touch of Yokel Bear talking about stuff which has happened on the social media.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A bit of the Dum-De-Dum universe, which is part of the galaxy which is the Archers. In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both.
I mean, I was 8 years old, interesting, the same age as the Dragon King's daughter when she comes out of the sea. But what was happening to me when I was 8 years old was that I was at the hands of a paedophile in a classroom for a year. And
awesome. Yeah. For me, I think the reason that I somehow managed to win in the end is that for me, it's about an economy of the three things that bring a song together.
Catch up with me speaking to friends and interesting people every Friday afternoon on Friday 15, which you can get, of course, from a podcatcher of your choice.
Hello, I'm Lucy, and this is Walkie Talkie. I walk my dog, Basil, pretty much every day in a foresty bit of London. I have been doing so for about 4 years. And I meet people that, as a dog walker, you talk to people. If your dogs get on, you say, which way are you going? Can I come with you? And you just sort of amble along. And you can end up having the most extraordinary conversations. Partly because you are walking side by side and facing front, so there's no embarrassing eye contact. If things get a bit heavy, if someone starts talking about something that they find emotional or difficult, then you can always divert your attention onto the dogs and relieve the tension a little bit. We've seen, as a group of dog walkers, we've seen people get pregnant, have children. We've seen people whose dogs have become ill and died, and the owner says, oh, I can never have another one, and then in a couple of months' time they appear with a puppy and everyone's delighted to see them. And we've seen people's marriages break down, new romances start. It's a lovely way to start your morning. It never fails to give me something nice to think about, something interesting to think about, even if it's not nice. And having a dog is a sort of a universality, really. The people aren't all like me, as I hope you'll realise over the course of the series.
Leading up to the 1860 election,
In walks a gentleman by the name of Abraham Lincoln, who is the Republican candidate. The Republicans to the South represent the ending of slavery. And Lincoln, despite the fact that his sentiment was always in the beginning to preserve the Union rather than to abolish slavery, becomes the lightning rod of anti-Southern sentiment. And he ends up winning the election in 1860 with no support from the South.
The Guardian, Manchester, Tuesday, November 20th, 1860. Summary of news, foreign. The details respecting the presidential election furnished by the New York journalist, not complete, but they not only assure us of Mr. Lincoln's election, but show that the Republican Party has obtained far more than the requisite number of votes for his return. It is calculated that New York, Pennsylvania, the New England states, New Jersey, and the Northwestern states give him 171 electoral votes, or 19 more than the majority required for the election, the total number of electoral votes being 303. It is not improbable, too, that this majority may be further swelled by the result of the elections in the Pacific states of Oregon and California. We have no account of the manner in which the Southerners have received the intelligence of Mr. Lincoln's election. The next advices will no doubt be filled with fierce Southern declamations and protest, but it's not very likely that any Southern states will do anything more than talk loudly about secession.
Listen to the first show exclusively on Mixcloud today and subscribe to us on iTunes from Washington to Obama. 10 American Presidents, the new podcast from Royfield Brown.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Joe Colbert here with the social media roundup for this week. Going to start on the forum. Purple Pumpkin's been doing a bit of investigation, including logging on to websites such as the Welsh Meat Board. Didn't even know that website existed. I'm sure it's fascinating. But basically, about the incubation periods, trying to track down who might be responsible by figuring out how long it takes to incubate IBR. And Purple Pumpkin has put a call out. Is there a vet in the house? Basically, do we have any listeners who have veterinary knowledge that would be able to aid us in figuring out who is responsible for bringing IBR into the village? It's Pip, though, isn't it? Yeah, it's definitely Pip. But anyway, but if there are any vets out there, call in. Tell us what you know. Another thing we talked about this week was, I know this probably makes me a bad person, over on the Facebook page, I said that I quite enjoyed the fact that Pip was unravelling. It was quite satisfying. Denise Tomlinson agrees with me, said it gets worse for Pip, which, to be honest, brings a lightness to the heart and a spring to one step, and nation rejoices. But other people, Sue Clayton said, OK, I know I may be alone here, but actually I'm feeling quite sorry for her. And Luke Hannington, in a stunning revelation, admitted that he has a crush on Pip and she can do no wrong. Steady on there, Luke. We also talked about whether Peggy is a caring matriarch looking out for a family or a bit of an interfering, judgmental old bat. Well, the jury was kind of out on this one. Very kind of, you know, the pros and cons. But Kate Lyle said, well, look, she's both. She's capable of changing her mind and admitting her mistakes, which is pretty admirable and very different to a great niece Pip. I think also as well, the other things we've been talking about on the Facebook page, we have been talking about, you know, what's going to happen with this IBR thing? You know, what's going to, how is this all going to plan out? And Alice Andrews, I've got to say, if we did social media post of the week, this would be my social media post of the week. I'm going to read it out in full. This is Alice's view of what's going to happen. The Archer family will contract IBR. Rex locks them up in Grange Farm, but gets called away on a big Birmingham Airport job in his taxi, so he can't alert the village. He leaves it to Toby, but Toby leaves the gate open, the idiot. They escape. They maraud around, being horrible and rude as usual. But also, now they're bitey and rubby. Many more infections happen. Only a few left hiding in Grey Gables, except Anisha. She's in Glasgow. She comes back to the village, faced with the scene of devastation left behind by Jill. She has to load shotguns and let's rip. Alice, I think you're talking about a zombie apocalypse there. But, you know, we all know that's definitely going to happen. The other thing is, of course, just to finish off with this week, can't ignore it. He's back. Matt's back. It's the return of the Matt. So, you know, what do people think about it? Well, some people thought it was a bit contrived. Some people were just like, you know, Tib Stav said, disbelief is having trouble staying suspended. And Karen Valerie Hodgson says, I think Matt Crawford has a bad case of plot device syndrome. It seems utterly predictable to bring him back at this point of the Lillian and Justin saga. However, other people were quite excited. Alexandra Allport, and I quote directly here, posted, oh my God, oh my God, runs around flapping hands wildly and crashing into things. The other thing we did this week is that we did a poll. A proper poll. I figured out how to do polls. Which team are you on? Team Justin, Team Tiger, or none of the above? And the winner is... drumroll. Team Justin, 48%. Team Tiger got 30%. But Team 22%... Team none of the above voted 22%. But a clear lead there. People are on Justin's side. But let's see how things pan out. So that's it. That's the social media roundup this week. Been exciting, hasn't it? Okay, cheerio, everybody.
Thank you for that, Yokel Bear. Lucy,
mm-hmm.
Would you like to hit us with some tip-top tweet action? Thank you very much, please.
Sam Mary D Mark 2 said, Alice does offer a call to the stud farm. Blimey, no wonder he's knackered all the time. Poor bloke. Oh, if anybody was going to... Oh, not Alistair. We don't want more of them. Dr. Wallington. I picture Peggy leafing through the Reader's Digest while Justin Owen loads the story of his marriage. Yes, she couldn't have sounded less interested. Andy D. Make the Tea said, does no one in Ambridge have headphones? I thought that as well. It's like a symbol, isn't it, of teenage rebellion is loud music. And then everybody uses headphones.
That's Sally very true. I hadn't thought of that.
Yes. Well, I was listening to it on headphones when this music was blaring out in Josh's bedroom. And I was thinking of Ben's bedroom. And I thought, why doesn't he just have headphones in? Mm. Ridiculous. Magnetic Flea said, I know I'm late to the party, but I'm not sure I like Pip's sexual technique. In you go! And
is
Robert
that not
Wilson.
Tweet of the week?
No, this is tweet of the week.
Oh, wow.
It made me... It happened about a second and a half after... Hello, Pussycat. Robert Wilson. And all he put was, shit the fucking bed, it's Tiger. Oh dear. And he has left us a call, which we're going to play at the end.
He's developing his own little fan base. Fan base. And he's helping to recruit new dum-de-dums.
I know. Well, that's why we have to put him at the end, because he says hello to them.
Well done. Well done, sir. And we will come back to your call later. Right, now, folks, got some interesting news. I've been thinking about this Matt malarkey. And I need to do another new podcast like I need a hole in the head. However, people are talking in my earlobes, Lucy, and I'm almost convinced. So that's all I'm saying. Now, I'm going to talk about more map action next week. Dumdydum.com, go there. It's got tracked. It's got awesome things going on. And now, also, our Cosmo has decided to take up the cudgels and basically run the website. And
he's already nagging me.
I know. Also, Purple Pumpkin, you tweeted me, funny enough, on Twitter. And you said, perhaps you could help out as well. What would be involved? Now, basically, you just got to do loads of stuff and work all the time. However, I will DM you and let you know. But I think you should maybe hook up with Cosmo on the Twitters. And the pair of you can just, like, do stuff. So that's that. Now, moving back onto things, Tractor, go there, pin yourself to the map and just hang out with other Archers loving Dum-de-Dum listeners, because that's what that's all about. We have had a few donations in the last few weeks, and I will get those. We have had a few donations in the last week, and I will commemorate everybody who has basically chucked us.
Commemorate? They've donated, not died.
What's the word I need here, Lucy?
Thank.
There you go. Good old fashioned. Now.
I will. Not a quicker. No.
I will remember you all. That's where I went with a commemorate. I don't know where my brain's gone. Anyway, I'll thank you all next week. I'll draw up a little list. I don't want to make this show too long because we had quite a few calls. So just bear with us. But, folks, if you would like to help keep our little show on the road, there are a couple of ways this can be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on our website, or you can go to patreon.com and join the merry band of those 30-odd or so people that donate just a little each time we put out a show. Now, remember to get in contact with us. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe. You can do that by going to dumdydum.com, where there's Tractor and there's Dumdy Dogs and Dumdy Mogs and all manner of Dumdy Dum goodness. Or you can call us on 0203 031 3105 to leave us a telephone message. On social media, specifically Twitter, we are at Dumdy Dum. Me, I'm at Royfield. Harriet, the woman of 1,000 Archers voices, is at Sandbridges.
And I am at Lucy V. Freeman. Although I am giving up with Twitter, so I probably wouldn't bother.
Why?
I've
heard you say this before. What's happened this week?
Come on. Oh, it's just a flipping echo chamber. And, you know, and all of it is Brexit and Corbyn. And I'm just sick of all of it, really. And people...
You're sick of Corbyn?
People deliberately picking fights with people in order
to... You're on their side.
Just to create a bit of drama because they're bored. And you think, put the phone down. Go away and do something. Oh, I can't bear it.
You were right about Corbyn from the very start.
Yep.
I'll give you that, Luce. I've come... to accept, I don't like it, but I've come to accept Brexit.
Well, we haven't got a lot of choice, really, have we?
No. You know what?
I think for a while we were a bit like King Canute, weren't we? Standing on the beach going, but we don't want it, so we can't have it. Just said to go back. Shoo! Let's not put this on, otherwise we'll get a million Brexiteers arguing with us, but yeah.
Anyway, on Facebook, or some might call it the Book of Face, you can go and join the Millie Bell and Yokel Bear loving with another 1,500 Dumdy Dummers. And they talk about the Archers ad nauseum. And quite simply, to join them, you just go onto the Book of Face and type in Dumdy Dum, and then you can just go join them. And that's awesome. Now, Lucy, have you got anything to say at the end of this
Yes,
moment?
I have.
Oh,
I have
gosh,
a message,
right.
I have a message a... for Ooh, Yokel right. Bear.
Okay.
Who is having refresher driving lessons. And I just wanted to give him a message of solidarity because I was absolutely petrified of driving. I was terrible. I only learned about 6 years ago. And I cried. I had hysterics. I got in the car and couldn't move it. And it was just awful. Horrendous. And it took me ages to pass my test.
How many times?
I passed first time, but that was after a billion lessons.
Oh,
if you have
okay.
that many lessons, you are passed first time. And also very lucky traffic as well. I was just hugely lucky, I think. But I just wanted to say it is so, when you do it and you feel happy again and you feel confident and you think, oh, look, people think I'm a proper driver. Whee! It's just so lovely. So Don't let the panic win, and it will be brilliant, and just keep going. You'll be a better driver for it, because the worst drivers are the people that say, oh, I'm a natural driver. Of course you're not. Human beings weren't made to sit on their asses wiggling their feet around to make something move. It's just ridiculous. So nobody's a natural driver. So if you're worried about safety, and you're worried about not crashing into anybody else, then you will be a better driver. So good.
Wait a minute. Where has all this been happening? Why don't I know anything about this?
What?
It's been on Twitter.
No, he just put a little tweet the other day that he was having refresher driving lessons and he was feeling a bit worried.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, I tell you, I passed my Canadian driving test about 6 weeks ago.
You?
Not Canadian, Californian, sorry.
And on the wrong side of the road as well.
Exactly. Wrong side of the road, everything coming at me from crazy angles. And you know what they do over here? And it's really noticeable when you drive as opposed to being driven. Americans done half love road signs and furniture to the point of just, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, it's just, there's too many markings on the road, too many signs, blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the thing. What they call the crosswalk, which we all know is a zebra crossing. How many different colours and configurations do they have for the same effing thing? No, but seriously, Lucy, it's a serious point. Sometimes they're yellow. Sometimes they're white. Sometimes they don't have the thick markings. It's just two stripy lines, two lines. And then sometimes they have one line. It's all the same thing. Ridiculous. Bonkers. Anyway, I passed. And the...
Well done.
And thank you. And the driving instructor said, so I only really passed because I just wanted a bit of American, well, took the test because I wanted a bit of American ID. And pulled over at the end and he said, 1 minute there, sir. And he took about 2 minutes. I was proper nervous. And he went, oh, yeah, you've passed. And he says, you've been driving for a very long time, haven't you? And I went, yeah. And you know what? It really shocked me, Lucy. When I worked it out, I've been driving for 33 years.
Wow.
Yeah. My dad gave me my first driving lesson at the age of 15. And yeah. Because my dad was a bus driver. So there was a
bus. You were driving a bus? No.
but I drove on the bus driver's training circuit at the age of 15. It was the most exciting day of my life. And then my second lesson, my mum came along and we're driving along. And my mum said, Glenn, when are you going to tell him he can actually go into third gear? There are some other gears. But the
most... these two.
The one of the most exciting days of my life, though. I must have been 16 at the time. My dad pulled up outside of school. My dad was a proper little rebel, you know. And he says, son, get in the driving seat. I went, what do you mean? He said, get in the driving seat. He said, just take your tie off. And I went, Dad? And he went, get in the driving seat, take your tie off, drive the car. And we drove off. And my friends were like, oh!
Yeah. Bloody hell.
Yeah, my dad, naughty. I think back now and I go, Dad, that's a bit naughty. But by then, I've been driving for a year. Admittedly, though, it was all around these kind of driving test tracks, you know, for bus drivers and stuff. Yeah, it wasn't always on the streets, but I could, you know, I could totally drive. But it just really shocked me when he says, how long have you been driving? And I went, 33 years. Crumbs. Anyway, I think it's time for Robert Wilson. Are we done?
Hooray! Yes!
That was a quick one.
Good!
I thought it was going to be super long.
Nope. I zipped through it.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. Have you missed me?
Naked Fingers here. It's Friday night. I've had my usual glass or three of white wine. Sometimes I have red, you know, or a beer or whiskey, but anyway, white wine tonight. Three or four glasses. Nearly a bottle. But oh my God. Shit the fucking bed. Tiger is back. And I think it's the original Tiger. It sounded like Kim Durham. I think Twitter has probably exploded. The hashtag #ArtTheArchers has actually melted and fallen off the edge of the internet. This is perfect. Oh, it set my weekend up. beautifully. Very excited. And so, sounding slightly camp too, but there we go. Isn't it wonderful? A love triangle between Lillian, Justin, and Matt. Sod the cow flu. Sod everything else that's going on in the Archers. Sod the bed and breakfast. Sod Kirsty. Sod Tom. Sod the lot of you. This is what the Archers is about. Oh my God. I can't wait. It's going to be good. Oh, sorry, I forgot to say hello to Nuna, my second work-related recruit to Dumpty Dum. I'm doing the work of the Lord, Royfield and Lucy. The work of the Lord.
Return of the man. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.